Well, it has been a very eventful week in federal politics, as it always seems to be. A momentous week in Canberra, the same week that marked the 50th anniversary of the Whitlam dismissal. The Liberals announced they were walking away from net zero. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, secured a new bilateral treaty with Indonesia. Well, joining me to dissect the week in politics is the Friday Political Panel. This morning, I'm joined by Jason Katsoukas, a special correspondent with the Saturday Paper. Jason, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sally.
Katina Curtis is the Canberra Bureau Chief with the West Australian. Katina, good to have you back.
Good morning, Sally.
And Mel Clark, it's been such a long time. Good morning to you again.
It has indeed.
Katina, if I start with you, the net zero position, the breakaway from bipartisan position with the government, which the Liberals are talking about yesterday, what sort of position does this place the Liberal Party in now, in your view?
Well, let's see. They've basically given the conservative elements in the party nearly everything they wanted. I think that there's an element of leadership in here as well. Susan Lee trying to protect her own leadership, that is. The problem from her is going to be, well, you've given them this, they're not going to stop. You know, there's already mutterings that the next issue, they'll now say thanks very much and start agitating on immigration as the next issue. It certainly, as you say, walks away from bipartisan position on, you know, Australia's approach on the international stage on climate change. I did have a quick chat with some investor types yesterday who said, as far as investment uncertainty, actually it's probably a little bit of a moot point because no one really thinks the Liberals are going to win the next election anyway. So they're at best, you know, 5 years away from implementing this policy, not two. But there's just still so many questions about this policy. I mean, I think they've said, you know, they basically have said, well, we still want to, we still want Australia to reduce emissions, but they're going to dismantle everything that's been set up to actually foster that happening. They won't say how they'll do it. They won't say when they'll do it. They'll bring down power bills, how or when, also open questions, like really unknown. It also really struck me yesterday, you know, Susan Lee's trying to flip the fight to the economics and say this is all about power bills. You know, she kept saying yesterday again and again, she said, oh, the mum struggling with the small kids, struggling every time she opens the power bill every month or every quarter. But when, you know, when it, and she said, you know, Mr. Albanese, when will you bring power bills down? But when the exact same question was put to her, if you get in May 28, you know, if the election is held then, when will you bring down power bills? Oh, well, we will bring down power bills. Yes, but when? I mean, you know, they're saying the government has questions to answer, hasn't released enough details. I mean, exactly the same questions are putting to them fruitlessly.
Jason, what do you think of the electoral implications of this, particularly trying to win back city seats, which the Liberals would need to do to thread the needle to get back into office?
Well, certainly those urban MPs that lost their seats at the last election, people like Keith Wallahan, are of the view that this is not going to help the Liberals win back those seats. And that's what the polling certainly says. But it is a bit untested in terms of where public opinion will go here, because we've had a bipartisan consensus on net zero up until this point. So it might be like The Voice, that once the bipartisan consensus breaks down, support for net zero will collapse as well. That's what's happened in the UK, and people like Matt Canavan are betting the same will happen here. But it is difficult to see that happening. It's a different voting system in the UK. Also in the US, we've got compulsory voting here, which means the centre always comes out to vote, and public opinion seems to be firmly backing net zero, because people equate it with action on climate change, and opposing net zero just seems to say to many voters, you just don't believe in climate change. And that's certainly what Susan Lee was, you know, desperate to try to avoid, that kind of giving that impression yesterday. But I wasn't convinced, and I'm sure a lot of voters won't be convinced either.
It's a pretty complicated message to be trying to sell to a disengaged public.
That's right.
Mel?
Look, when it comes to the result of this electorally, I think we're far too far away from knowing, given I don't think we even know who will be leading the party and what their position might be when we get to the next election. This has been the ultimate compromise of a leader installed with moderate support, delivering a policy to appease the Conservatives in the party who want to continue to push, moderates who are now divided between those who think Susan Lee has been dudded by other male Conservative leaders in the party, and the moderates who are frustrated that they supported someone because they wanted a moderate outcome, but they just ended up with the same policy as the Nationals anyway. So no one's terribly happy with the current situation in the Liberal Party, which means we're really just in a waiting zone for this to come to the next reckoning. And whether that's over how difficult this policy is to sell because of all of its contradictions, or whether it's because the next push comes on immigration, there is a time limit on how long the current situation and Susan Lee's leadership is tenable. Whether that comes at the end of this year, whether that comes early next year, I think that's a very big question mark. But this will come to a head again.
What about the relationship between the Liberal Party and the National Party? Is the tail wagging the dog here? Someone who did look pretty happy yesterday afternoon was Barnaby Joyce.
Barnaby Joyce is happy. David Littleproud is happy. Whatever divisions there were in the Nationals before, I think they're in a pretty comfortable position now where they feel like they have command over policy direction. This will embolden the Nationals to continue to push their majority partner to different policy positions, because each time they've tried, they've succeeded. So that dynamic will continue, and that will play against the kinds of Liberal candidates that we're just talking about. Keith Wallahan, who lost his seat, Tim Wilson, who's trying to talk about how difficult it is to win back a seat from a Teal independent. Those seats talked very much about the damage that the Liberal Party, seeing to be led by the Nationals, caused them at the last election. Well, that will only be exacerbated this time around if this same dynamic continues.
And I also wonder whether it's not so much the Nationals wagging the coalition dog, if you like, here. It's One Nation seems to be spooking a lot of Liberal MPs, certainly MPs like Melissa McIntosh in Western Sydney. She seems very worried about this surge in support for One Nation, and that there's also these campaign groups like Advance, which have been out there bashing Net Zero for several months now. That seems to be what is spooking a lot of Liberals.
And yet the One Nation have put out a statement saying that they don't think this is the coalition dumping Net Zero at all. It hasn't gone far enough. So even if you're trying to appease that audience, you're not quite getting there.
What does all this mean for the government, Katina, with this loss of bipartisanship on Net Zero? Is that distinction of policy advantageous to the government, or could it get wedged here?
I guess it depends on how well it can continue talking about the plans that, you know, that it's doing. You had Chris Bowen on earlier, and they're just basically sticking with saying what we're doing is the right thing. We just got to stick with it and get through. The power prices thing is a problem for them, right?
The promise.
I mean, I think. I don't know if anyone's buying this argument, but they're trying to make the argument, well, we've had a second election and we didn't take that promise to the second election, and sort of hopefully it just goes under the desk and no one pays any more attention. But, you know, the figures that Chris Bowen and the PM are proudly saying, you know, 1,000 households installing batteries every day with the subsidised batteries program, like, those households are largely in those sort of outer suburban seats there, and you hearing again and again from the local MPs there, it's not about people worried about climate change, it's about people worried about their power bills, and doing whatever they can to help get those down. I was having a quick look actually at the power prices stuff, because it is fascinating, because WA obviously has a completely separate grid, and all the power infrastructure in WA is basically state-owned, and the prices are set in the state budget each year. So between 2019, so sort of before the pandemic, before the war in Ukraine, and the latest figures were sort of late 2024, power prices for the typical household bill in WA have gone up 8%. In New South Wales, they've gone up 26% and a bit, 26.7%. And they peaked in New South Wales in about late 2023, and they've come back ever so slightly. But, you know,
Those costs come back to a global market.
Exactly.
Because you're competing when you're talking about imports for coal or gas, you're competing on a global price, and that is rising. The cost of installing new renewables, the long-term trend is going down.
But the gas is expensive.
The gas
and
is
that's
expensive.
A particular problem on the East Coast, which is where most people live.
Yep.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast and our Friday political panel. Jason Katsoukas from the Saturday Paper, Katina Curtis from the West Australian, and our own Mel Clark. We'll jump through a few issues. Jason, Labor is mourning the loss of one of its controversial operatives and ministers from the 1980s and 90s in particular, Graham Richardson, who died last weekend. What have you made of the reaction to his passing?
Astonishing, the praise and this kind of glossing over of you know, what is euphemistically being called his controversial past. I cannot see how Graham Richardson is deserving of a state funeral. And I was shocked on Monday when the Prime Minister announced that. And it's kind of one of those examples of an issue that is kind of being buried by the chaos in the coalition. In any other week, you would think we would have seen several people from the coalition stand up and ask questions about why Graham Richardson is being given this honour, because nothing in Graham Richardson's past would seem to me deserving of this. And so I think it is a problem that there's not the proper scrutiny of a decision like this, that we might expect in normal times, if you like.
Mel, one of the other political happenings this week was the signing, or not the signing, but the announcement of this security pact with Indonesia. What does this signal to countries like China and Russia, who both have significant relations with Indonesia, which has maintained a non-aligned stance?
Yeah, I think it shows that Australia is doing a fair bit of diplomatic work to make sure that countries in the close immediate region geographically to us have stable links, clear communication pathways, and emphasising the shared concerns about China. And now, countries like Indonesia, and I think Vanuatu is another good example of a country that's sort of proudly non-aligned, likes to keep those conversations and dealings open with a range of nations, but they are still looking to their own security. What the Australian government has found was with it a change of president, with Prabowo Subianto, who has deep links to Australia, has a very keen eye on defence, given his previous roles both in the military and as a defence minister, an element of shared concerns about China's maritime activity in particular, and Australia has been able to do the diplomatic work to turn that into a formalised process despite Indonesia's non-aligned status. It is actually a really big diplomatic achievement. That's one of the things the government should get credit for.
Katina, we've got less than a minute to go. Are we expecting to see a return of focus from the Prime Minister back to domestic issues after summit season? He's still got some gatherings to go. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he is obviously not in Brazil this coming week for the COP, unless he makes a last-minute dash there if it suddenly becomes clear that we will win the hosting of next year's one. But, yeah, I think definitely domestically, and he has been quite clear to emphasise that, particularly when he stood up yesterday as well, saying, you know, here we are getting on doing things for Australians while the Liberals are navel-gazing.
Thank you very much to our Friday political panel. Katina Curtis from the West Australian, thank you again.
Thanks.
For coming in. Jason Katsoukas from the Saturday Paper, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Sally.
Mel Clark, we can never thank you enough. It's been a very long week,
Sally.
Hasn't it?
It really has.